system actually works. Cool. So you're with Indiana University? Okay. So come on in.
Still
don't
know what an Ogier is, by the way. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, let me give you the jump drive while we're both thinking about it. And looks like there's one person missing in action. And is Dan Bailey here? Nope. Well, it's 10:30. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody. As Peter Dooley, the esteemed program chair, said, thank you very much for coming here on the last day of the conference. My name's Matt London. I'm with New York State Public Employees Federation, a public sector union in upstate, in New York State, and with University of Maryland School of Nursing. And we've got either four or five great presentations for this session. And what we'll do, since there's sort of a potpourri of topics, we'll try to keep each presenter to 12 to 15 minutes and then allow time for a few minutes of questions and discussion before we go on to the next presentation. And our first presenter is Jeffrey Kamplin. He's a consultant in the Chicago area.
All right, good morning or afternoon, depending upon where you flew in from. My presentation today is kind of on defining the safety profession. I've got a bachelor's in occupational safety and health, and when I go to events like this or a lot of the safety association meetings, either local on or national level, and you start talking to other safety professionals out there, I just noticed that there were vast backgrounds, vast experiences, and it kind of fascinated me. And then I'm very active with the American Society of Safety Engineers, and I know years back there was a big push to really promote the certified safety professional. And if you want to start World War III in the safety profession, pit those without degrees or without certifications against those that do, and you'll see some of the contention and really, again, the vast experiences and backgrounds we have. So I was fortunate enough when the American Society of Safety Engineers was putting together a two-volume professional safety and health handbook. It's a compilation of over 80 authors. They asked me to write the chapter on safety management. And within that chapter, I added an extra little section, even though they didn't ask for it, on defining the safety profession, because I had some opinions and I had done a little bit of research in that area. And I was fortunate enough, again, to have that little section published in there. So a lot of the information that I'll be presenting today comes from that chapter and a few other recent studies on the safety profession. How do we progress this? Just the arrow. Okay. No relationships to disclose here. Starting out, just defining the safety profession, there's so many different backgrounds. People that do occupational and safety health full-time, do it part-time, have done it at various parts of their career. But some of the backgrounds that I have found dealing with the safety profession include health, fire, the insurance area, behavior-based safety, management, auditors. You can go through the whole list here. But it's a very, very diverse profession with again, a lot of various experiences and backgrounds. However, as fragmented as this profession is, the one bonding element of all these different occupations is that, we're all out to protect people, property, and the environment. So, in some degree, we do have that little rallying point there. As far as defining the safety professional, through my experience, I meet the blue-collar employee who was either injured and he became the safety advocate at their company, or he had a good friend that was injured or saw somebody killed and became the safety advocate within their organization. Sometimes we find there's a supervisor who happened to miss the meeting when they voted on who was going to be the safety representative, and they ended up in that role. And then there's the more formally educated, certified, or experienced professionals who decided to make it a career. And I would probably fall into that third category. My father got into safety more from the first avenue, became very successful doing that through the fire safety trade, and became a safety director at a major hospital, and he kind of influenced me into that little bit of an arena. But again, there's all different reasons why people end up taking over the safety responsibilities. So, you know, what have we achieved as a safety profession? Well, we know workplace injuries and fatalities have gone down significantly. Department of Labor says from 2001 to 2006, we're looking at a decline in injuries of about 22%, and fatalities dropped by about 7%. Mining, if you look at that, we're looking at a 30% decline in injuries and fatalities from now, from the 90s. So there is an impact out there. I don't know if it's solely based on what the safety profession has been doing out there. I'm currently going through a master's program right now, and we had an online discussion on, is OSHA the main reason why injuries have gone down? And I really started looking into it. I could probably come up with 6 or 7 other reasons why injuries have come down, besides OSHA being out there and besides safety people necessarily being out there as well. Also, what are some things we've achieved? There are some technical skills, not only in compliance, but also advancing safety management. So we've learned along the way that good safety just doesn't mean OSHA compliance. It's much more beyond that. And that OSHA compliance or regulatory compliance is really the bottom bar holding up the safety profession. That's not something we want to reach up for, but it's something that should be pushing the bottom up as we strive from the top. Advancing safety, some of the things we've done through the American Society of Safety Engineers, I know the National Safety Council has done this and some other groups, is what they call the business of safety, where showing the value of safety, that safety pays, that there's a return on investment. Liberty Mutual put a study out that said basically for every $1 of investment you put into safety, you get $3 to $6 in return. So now we're able to somehow show a little bit more value, that we're not just OSHA compliant, but hey, you know, we contribute to the business model as well, that it makes good sense to invest in safety. So what are some of the challenges of the safety profession? Well, one, the aging workforce and generational gaps that are out there. I have 3 18-year-old kids right now, so I'm experiencing that generational gap right now. Even as a profession, though, the National Safety Council last year did a salary survey, and one of the statistics that popped out to me was a majority of their members, 26%, were in the age group 53 to 59. And so we're at a stage now where those early pioneers in safety are now getting to the point where they're retiring. And we need to capture a lot of the knowledge that's out there. One of the initiatives that I'm working on, I'm the co-chair of the Body of Knowledge Committee for the American Society of Safety Engineers. And within that body of knowledge, we're trying to capture what competencies are necessary. What's the knowledge that our members have that they can contribute? Where are the gaps in these competencies so that we can pour research dollars into it, get better focused research? But it's a huge initiative, and we don't have a lot of time because, again, a lot of very knowledgeable and experienced professionals are retiring. But in general, our workforce is going through the same problems as well. Multilingual, multicultural workplaces has always been a challenge. Our growing international responsibilities, a lot of people I deal with spend a lot of their time overseas in various countries, trying to handle the different rules and regulations and cultural differences. Another big problem is the lack of perceived value by our management. And the American Society of Safety Engineers did a study last year. They haven't officially released the results. But one of the things they focused on was things that management frowned on as far as safety professionals. And there were 3 main things that had stuck out there. One, that the safety professional doesn't really have a good ability to assess the probability and severity of losses from accidents and from the hazards that are out there. So Here we're looking at risk assessment and risk management type skills. To implement techniques to measure hazard control effectiveness or to be able to show some kind of value for your program, that's something that they see or perceive as being lacking. And the third area they perceive as safety professionals lacking was providing advanced planning on safety issues, which I kind of relate to having a seat at the table. We have to be able to influence management. We have to be there at the table when they're doing their planning so that we can have some of the input. And these are a lot of things that our profession is certainly working on. As far as credentials and education, safety is relatively a fairly new discipline, less than about 40 years old. There are varying programs out there, but one of the big areas that we're hurting in is the doctorate level programs. Many of the educational programs are suffering right now because there aren't PhDs out there to teach these classes. And so again, there's a big initiative now to kind of push for the doctorate level courses. One of the problems is the few programs out there that delve into safety, health, industrial hygiene, NIOSH steals them all. So, you know, education kind of gets the short end of the stick there, and so that's going to be a big problem. Of safety professionals, and I'm talking certified safety professionals, about 90% of those certified safety professionals have degrees. There was a study done by the National Safety Council that said overall those who have safety responsibilities, about 45% of them, so less than 50% actually have graduated college. The big thing at the bottom is from a high school degree up to, you know, advanced degrees, there's a significant financial benefit for pursuing higher education as we go along as well. American Society of Safety Engineers, part of one of the studies that they had put together, listed the three highest degrees of safety professionals that are out there, and I don't know how well you can see that, but the top three are occupational safety and health, safety management, and business management. Those are the three top areas with safety engineering and industrial hygiene and environmental, the next three down the line. To give you an idea of the disciplines of where people are coming from with those higher education backgrounds. So transitioning from higher education over to certifications, there's over 300 different safety and health certifications out there. And if you add the term environmental or hazmat or waste into the process, we're looking at over 700 different certifications. And so you say, well, you know, which one's good for me? Which ones do I go after? So what we push through the American Society of Safety Engineers, a lot of other organizations push, is to have some kind of an accredited certification. So other than your check not bouncing, should not be the only criteria for becoming certified, that there should be some kind of a process that's out there. So some of the more readily identifiable certifications within the safety profession would be the CSP, CIH, CHMM, and the CPEA. So the CSP, Certified Safety Professional, there's about 11,000 certified safety professionals out there. Again, that's a significant number, but based on the number of safety positions available, it's really not that significant. There's about half as many, or 6,500 certified industrial hygienists, or CIHs. Certified hazardous material managers, there's about 8,500 of those out there. And there's about 1,400 certified professional environmental auditors, which is an environmental designation for safety, mostly safety and environmental. I teach the safety auditing side of the class for the auditing roundtable, who is they do the training and professional development for the CPEA. Okay. But again, just like with education, with certifications, there's a big dollar increase with getting certifications versus not being certified. Experience is one of those things that's hard to measure. You can't really measure it necessarily with education or certification. There's plenty of guys I know out there that say, you know, I might not be book smart, but I know safety. And so how do you go about measuring something like that? The type of experience we're looking for is hopefully experience that they've gained under the leadership of some kind of certified safety professional or other experienced safety professional. But we also recognize that workplace experience is also important. There's some pros and cons to that. One, if you've been in the workplace, you understand how things operate, that's a very strong position, but you also might learn all the bad habits that the workers learned as well. So there's a con to that. But again, history shows the longer you work within the profession, again, the more money that you make there. far as technical knowledge and competency, some of the things I learned working on this body of knowledge was if you put a matrix together, we're looking at there's an industrial or specific type of track, which talks about transportation or healthcare or mining or energy. But then there's disciplines that cut across all of those, such as management. Management hits all of those, or fire protection, environmental, international perspectives on those. So breaking down your knowledge and competency can be very complicated, and I think that's why we have such a vast background and experiences within the safety profession, is because we have so many disciplines and areas of expertise that we need to really beef up on. So what are some of the skills beyond just the technical? Well, the biggest is our ability to influence the workers, supervisors, the management, the country, the world. But the big things we need to focus on are value added to the organization. This is a big push that's out there. The thing that worries me is we're too worried about showing value to the business, and that if we don't show some kind of profit or some kind of positive push to the business model, then safety must not be important. Talking the business, talking the language of business, again, safety pays a return on investment. OSHA has a website called Safety Pays. This profession is moving more towards a risk assessment approach. The big thing that I'm worried about is when business leaders talk about risk, it's risk to profits. When I talk about risks, it's risks to the employees and injury. And so sometimes we need to make sure we're on the same page when we're talking about risk. But the big push is selling safety is important because it makes you a good corporate, it involves good corporate governance, and it's also a value to, it's a good social responsibility to be strong in safety. So though, kind of tying it all together, what qualifies somebody to be a safety professional? Well, having supervised experience from a seasoned safety professional, good work experience as well, accredited higher education, third-party certification, code of conducts and good ethics, the ability to influence and add value to an organization. And really what I see is we're changing, kind of morphing from a technical expert who performs a good job with skills specific to a certain profession to being a more versatile professional out there showing how to acquire skills and really provide value to the overall organization. And with that, that's my presentation. My contact information's up there. And does anybody have any questions?
Anybody?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I got to run to the airport, so thank you.
Oh, quick.